April 9th, 2009.
If it lets me log on.
Oh, it's being
up.
Oh, you're talking about.
It's
a long road.
Okay. Are
you using on my phone? I also have pictures on my laptop.
Tammy, I don't think you're phone that
low. Oh, no.
Wow.
So
low
you can actually reach.
Burn.
Yeah.
What?
But the
I said that you made the birth side,
so going the way you kind of described
it. No, no, these are crazy Easter.
Yes, I saw this.
Still, this is kind of this.
It's modifying.
All right, let's get started. I don't think, is Lourdes showing up? Anybody know if Lourdes is coming?
Tom called me about 45 minutes ago.
Okay.
So I told him to come back at
10 o'clock. I think we're there, aren't we?
We're there.
10:14. All right, so welcome to McNary, the famous theater.
Yes.
There's, I guess, bathroom is the porta potty out around the corner.
Or hang over by the corner of the powerhouse. There's waterborne toilets over there, too.
Can we just get in there without a key?
That sounds scary.
It was locked open earlier.
You say behind the powerhouse.
Right. Tammy's got some Easter treats that she's...
She stays up till
you want to give them a little rundown?
Thank you for these incredible.
Yeah. What they are?
Yeah.
They're bird's nests.
Bird's nests. It's a Mackie tradition, apparently.
It is.
A Mackie
There's
tradition.
Also a bag of M&M's I see Tim is hoarding. If you don't like the rest of the bird's nest.
Everybody got an agenda?
Oh, I don't. I got it.
Pass them on down.
Come on around. I know Fredericks is not here. He's on vacation. We all can raise our glasses to his grandmother. She's 100 today. That's where he's there.
Fredericks' grandma.
Fredericks' grandmother turns 100 today.
Oh, you're kidding.
No.
Good for her.
And if it's genetic, we're going to have Gary around for a long time.
Still drives a tractor.
Gary's going to be here forever.
She probably drives a tractor every day.
Yes. So we can look forward to Gary Fredericks being at these meetings for the next 40 years.
At least.
Yay! And you can tell him I said that.
Yeah.
Yes.
How was the tour of the TSW? Sorry, I didn't make it.
It's not operating.
I know. So there wasn't any tour?
No interest.
All right.
Okay, well, we're going to be, is there going to be a tour of the JBS dewatering screens after this? If anybody's interested.
They're watered up.
There is a tour next Thursday afternoon.
Are you interested in that?
That was mainly for Larry.
Larry.
I called Larry, left him a message. Doesn't look like he's coming today.
No, he's going to be on the phone, I think.
Okay. So I would say that I'll not be leading a tour along with Brad or Larry.
Okay.
So we'll make it a standing invitation to Larry. I can give him a call. If you see a bill, you can also relay the message that he's a standing invitation. Come down.
I like the eggs.
And we'll take a tour. I want to understand his thoughts on this.
Yeah.
And when he wants to do it, we'll make sure that coordinate with Brad.
Is he on the phone?
Larry?
Larry? He talked about he's going to be Monday, he's going to be up at Pelton Roundview. I think it was either Tuesday or Wednesday he was going to do his inspection out here. So.
That says it's good. Anybody home?
No, touch base. I know one of those, either Tuesday or Wednesday, he's going to be out here doing an inspection, I think. And then the other day, he's got to be up somewhere, rolled out or something.
Okay.
So.
Is that you, Tom?
Yep.
Or Ben?
I'd like to make an announcement, too.
Okay.
We're talking about tours. There is an SCT tour, but anyone from F-Pond is welcome to attend next Thursday.
Where?
We're going to start at Little Goose at 9 a.m. So anyone wants to meet us at Goose at 9 a.m., great. Then we're going to do Lomo a couple hours after Goose. And we're going to end up the afternoon probably around 3 here to see the tail race conditions for the TSW. So
make sure you bring appropriate
safety. So that's just a one-day tour next Thursday.
Yeah. And anybody has to coordinate maybe with Tim to get on the list.
You know, Larry's coming back. I've seen a couple of guys on the TSWs.
I haven't heard one way or the other from him.
Okay. That's on the April calendar, by the way.
That's the 16th.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, I just talked to Larry, and I think Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday is when he was going to be out of the office. So he didn't indicate that he'd be there for the Thursday.
Okay.
Well,
we get a break here. We give him a call.
Okay.
We've got a pretty easy agenda, I think. And we should get out of here at a pretty good hour. Why don't we just start with introductions, starting with Rick.
Rick Martinson, PSMFC, Small Monitoring, John D. Obama.
Jerry McCann, Fish Pass Society.
Tim Dexter, Corps of Engineers.
Tom Bailey, Corps of Engineers.
ACNC, WDFW, the adult fish camps for Bono and Dowson, John D.
Greg Moody, Corps of Engineers, Ottawa.
Charles Morrow, Rabbi.
Ed Meyer, National Marine Fisheries Service.
Rosanna Tudor, Smolt Monitoring, McNary Dam.
Fred Minzik, Smolt Monitoring Corps, and WDFW, Laura Granite.
Tammy Mackey, Corps of Engineers.
Bernard Clatch, Corps, Portland District.
Bill Spurgeon, Corps of Engineers, Lower Monumental.
Mark Plummer, Corps of Engineers, Ice Harbor.
Steve Jeffers, Corps of Engineers, Ice Harbor.
Bart Nauman, Corps of Engineers, District Office.
Bill Heavlin, NIMS, Portland.
Brad Eby, Corps of Engineers, McNary.
Derek Fryer, Corps of Engineers, Walla Walla.
We got Shane on the phone. Anybody else join us on the phone?
Ben Hausman, Corps of Engineers, Bonneville.
Thanks, Ben. All right, well, let's get...
Nobody from John Day, huh?
Nobody from John Day. They're putting in the wires at the Dow, so I'm sure they're a little bit busy. Either that or they're lashing down a crane.
They don't want to talk about
John
crane.
Lashing down the
yes. We'll talk about that. Any comments on the March minutes? I'll take that as a no. Let's go over the agenda. Is there any additions to put on the agenda? I think I added there was a request to move the installation of the vertical weir at Cascade Islands at Bonneville from May 6th night to May 4th. So I'm going to add that on. Anybody else have anything? Can you what? Subtract?
Subtract something?
Sure.
I do not.
Okay, well, we'll just...
It's for November.
I know.
We've been waiting and waiting and waiting. Fish lights. Okay.
It's just an action item.
I know, it's an action item.
So, this past center folks, I think, are leaving early. And so...
We can jump that up, no problem.
Can we move the sample size...
Yeah, we'll go right into it.
All right,
sure. Okay, with that, anybody hasn't signed in, it's over here.
You signed in already, Jeff. Yes, you did.
Okay. Start off with, well, where is it on here? It is.
Hmm?
Oh. We're going to start it with agenda item 8, the smolt monitoring programs condition subsampling numbers. There was an SOR submitted to, I believe it was Tim, myself, and FPAC.
Just a memo.
Oh, was it in a memo? That's right. Memos, SORs. A memo from Fish Passage Center asking for clarification on sampling size number. So,
just so people know from from my perspective, we're working on a response. I guess that's how this will work. If we kind of get this memo kind of lopped over, we'll work on it and bring it back. So we're working on that. You know, there are some, definitely some things that we'll be talking about. I mean, there's a number of things in the memo, just I don't know where they came from. I don't know. It says that they're based on the Corps' input. It's not from me, and it's not from Vern, and it's not with this past plan, so I don't know where some of the stuff came from.
Which one are we talking about? The condition subsample?
Oh, the stuff that says... currently, the condition monitoring protocol, as determined by the FPALM subgroup on fish condition monitoring, was set at 100 fish of each species and clip type. This means that during spring, you can have 800 juvenile salmon examined for injury and disease.
Potentially, yeah.
So I don't. Did Fish Passage Center come up with the clip type?
No, that was that. You know. That was my interpretation of the discussions we had at the FPOM subgroup. So that's where that number came from. And you know, so if that's not what everybody's agreement is, I certainly not my druthers to do that. So if that's not everybody's agreement, then it's easy for me to back away from that, because that's not what I would recommend. I would not have recommended.
I don't think anyone in the room would.
Yeah. Okay. So let's just shelve that number and basically, it's a core recommendation as far as we're concerned in terms of the condition sample size.
So that the 800 fish is not a core recommendation.
Well, let's just say that it's not, and we'll move on.
We can do more.
Prior to this, I guess, misunderstanding or confusion, what was the sample rate?
The sample rate.
Well, it was 100 sample size. 100 of each fish, clipped, non-clipped, made no difference. Each species alternating.
For the detailed condition sample, it was more of a core requirement for transportation collection, as I understand it. The detailed condition, I mean, we were doing full sample descaling, but the detailed subsample data varied from site to site, so.
But at the transportation site, Vern, it would have been 400. At John Deere Bonneville, it would have been 200, maximum sample.
Of detailed condition sample data.
Then I don't think we have a problem with keeping it that.
400 fish at the
it's up for, I mean, I don't, yes. It's Tim's call on transportation sites.
No, the target is not 400 fish.
No.
So the target, in the fish passage plan, it says that each project will sample 100 fish of the dominant species in the river. So, never says anything about clip type.
Okay. So 100 fish is a dominant species.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So should we define dominant?
Hey, Bonneville.
Or
the one that
one's the biggest and largest.
So
there's no one dominant.
Just one species.
Yeah, we never told that.
One species, in other words, or all species that are dominant
species.
It's not one species.
Yeah, we don't
dominant.
Have that.
So we're about to throw out an example here.
Let's say that
you have in the river 90% of your fish are steelhead, 5% are chinook, and 5% are sockeye. Okay? The dominant species in the river in that example would be steelhead. And then the sample, you're going to stop the detailed condition monitoring at when you hit 100 steelhead.
Okay.
And in the process of getting to 100 steelhead, you're likely to encounter about 5 chinook, 5 sockeye. End of detailed sample.
So you're going to do sampling on the less predominant species as well.
The target is 100 fish of the predominant species in the river, and you would work up the fish getting to that. And when you get that,
right. Okay, so you're saying all species that are predominant in the river, not just one species.
No.
Okay, so you're saying all steelhead, but some up to 100 of other species.
I'm not saying you're only doing the condition sampling on just the predominant species.
Okay, that's what I was trying to get at, is what you meant by the four most predominant species.
Okay, I'll start over. Okay, here's the example.
Yeah,
there's 90% of the fish in the river steelhead, 5% chinook, 5% sockeye.
Okay.
Your final detailed condition monitoring sample. That's what we're calling it now. Would be 100 steelhead.
Right.
And the few number of Chinook and sockeye that it took as you got up to 100 steelhead. In this example, that would be about 100 steelhead, about 5 Chinook, and about 5 sockeye.
So what if you have 100 Chinook, there's 50% Chinook and 50% steelhead?
Then you would have two dominant species in the river.
Okay,
or
so
nearly, you would still, chances, okay, let's throw another example. 51% steelhead, 49% Chinook in the river. Okay? Mm-hmm. You stop your detailed condition monitoring when you hit 100 fish of the dominant species in the river. So you hit 100, and we said steelhead, I just said it was 51%. So you get 100 steelhead, you're going to get, let's say, 99 Chinook. Okay? Yeah.
Wait a minute. So you do 99 Chinook in the condition sample?
Yeah.
You're not targeting that. You're targeting the dominant.
You're targeting the dominant.
It is set by the predominant, just like it always is, by the predominant.
I know, but you know, on a day-to-day basis, it's going to fluctuate, you know, so I you don't know going into the sample what's predominant.
Right.
Ideally, the sample is random. The detailed subsample is random. You have technicians throughout each batch that comes in, take fish out of that anesthetized group and put them in a basket for the biologist to examine. The predominant species is going to be easy to identify as the tallies are being taken by your technicians. You know how many you're getting of Chinook or dominant steelhead. It's not a question. It's not an issue. We know which the predominant species is.
Right.
If I get 100 and I still have a whole bunch of fish out in my sample tank, I don't stop taking detailed condition information. I might want to include some more of the Chinook if they are a lesser species in predominance. But I continue my sample and I take information on the fish that I'm getting. I think we just don't want to turn around and handle more fish than we need to. 100 fish of the predominant species
is our
objective.
That you sample until you get 100 fish of the most predominant species. Whatever you've sampled of other species to that point, you stop sampling? Because Fred just said you'd continue sampling the other.
Well, that's I'm trying to identify the sample is still going. We still have fish out in the sample tank. Our objective isn't just to throw them all out. If there's opportunity to take some more information on fish, we do that because we still have fish coming through. We don't just end it. Even though there are fish out in the sample tank, we still have to count them.
Do you need weights on all species present in your sample for transportation?
For transportation, we try to take weights on everything. Yes.
Well, let's try to deal with this issue first, and then get into the transportation because I think it's a separate target anyway.
Yeah, but you're going to spread out.
So I'm not quite sure.
You're not going to take it out.
Clarify that,
right?
If you have two predominant species, do 100 of each of those predominant species.
Up to
100 of each of those.
I wouldn't even say we can have two predominant. The only way you can have two predominant is if they're in the exact same abundance and in your.
Well, the thing is, you don't know until the sample is done what the ratio is exactly of those two species. You know, 51 to 49.
We've got a counter board up there, and we can take a look at what the techs are sorting out. Take a look at the counter board. There's 100 steelhead. There's 50 Chinook. I have a pretty good idea what is coming into the sample.
Question. You guys are still splitting the A side and B side by large small fish?
Not him.
No.
By not Granite.
Not a Granite.
So this only applies to Granite, not to the projects? This discussion?
No. But on A side, B side, you're still looking at that as a sample. It's a separate subset, sub-batch.
Okay, so my point was is if you sample, your B side first, which I assume is your large side still.
Well,
you're going to hit a bunch of steelhead before you get small.
You also
fish.
Got the fact that, your species composition, except for a few rare times, is not going to totally flip-flop. You can, you know what's coming in by what time of year it is.
Sure. I was just thinking that if you're going to say you've steelhead or your predominant fish, and you sampled, for whatever reason, your big side first.
Right.
You are going to get 100 steelhead before you even get to your A side.
Well, but
and
you
then
know.
And we'll have just very few sockeye and everything.
Well, if you know that 80% of your collection is coming in on B side, you can only do 20 out of A side and save the rest for B side. Yeah.
Okay, that's the point I wanted to make, is that you be aware of that you might be done with your...
Right, I'm not going to do all 100. I'm not going to do all 100 of my steelhead out of A side when I know that the predominant of them are sitting in B side.
We also have...
How many would you do?
Kind of based on the ratio of the fish counter show on the...
Based on what our collection has been, we can take a look and see. And
educate
and
guess.
Yeah, I kind of guess.
And the nest that this comes in during, I mean, if you're not familiar with the sampling process, that's part of the problem we have with this discussion of not knowing what to do, is not knowing the sampling process. We have a anesthetist that comes down and says, I'm about halfway through. You know, are you going to grab all your fish out of your first 10 batches that she sends in? Or are you going to spread them out through the entire process? For us, we're taking so many out of each batch so that you're sampling all the way through.
You spread it out over the entire process, so you're not taking them. Because steelhead like to hang out in the bottom. They only want to come in that last little dip when they have to. So you spread it out.
Maybe we should back up and ask the group the two basic questions. How many fish do you need to sample to give an accurate poundage estimate for transportation purposes? And how many fish do you need to sample to get a representative look or glimpse at fish condition with the other component of condition sample? You know, if we can answer those two questions, then if they're the same,
only got a couple.
How many fish do you need to look at before you're confident in what you're seeing represents a condition of the run at large?
Condition or weight?
It's condition.
Descaling is indiscriminate. So you're going to see descaling on the fish as it's coming through if you got blocked orifices on all your fish.
But we look at all fish for descaling. So
okay.
You do full sample the scale.
How many fish do you need to look at to determine if the project is causing injuries? What's the lowest number that you have?
30.
You're going to see that, and you're going to see that right off the bat.
If there's a pattern to injury, you're going to notice it.
Start that at the separator.
Yes and no. I mean, because you're not anesthetizing fish and handling them at the separator.
No. You're going to see that in the sample, and you're going to see it right away. 30 fish, and if you have a descaling issue, it's going to show up in your first 30 fish. You're going to see it very easily. And I don't think it takes 30 fish to know that you've got a blocked dwarf.
Nice. And they get sucked up.
And that's I guess, to clarify your question, you're saying how many fish do you have to look at? Are you saying of species or fish in general? Because I'm going to look at 100 fish, basically. We're going to try to look at 100 fish during the day. So I will have looked at 100 fish of a variety of species.
Is that enough? Is that too many? Would this group be happier with a smaller sample size? Would they be confident in the results?
All I'm saying is you're going to see it. If there's descaling going on, whatever fish you're looking at, within the first 10 fish, you're going to notice that there's fresh descaling going on. By the time you get to your 100th fish, you're talking to your biologist saying, we got to cycle the orifices. We got to look at trash rack ranking. We got to find out what's going on because we obviously have a problem.
So right now, the fish passage plan does not say anything about equipment. But it does say that we'll do the condition sampling on 100 fish of the predominant species in the river.
Is that in this
fact? Yes.
Yes.
Right. If we as a group decide that we want to modify that and have it just say the 100 fish, period, and cut it off there so we get away from predominant species in the river and just...
The only possible problem there is if you're shifting units, so you have different orifices coming into play as far as how many fish are passing through any orifice. Okay, if you limit things too much, then as they change units, you may not pick up fish coming through those other orifices.
Yeah.
No,
Charlie
and
Chance.
Yeah, but what fish are.
Whatever criteria you have, we already have an overriding
sample go, how many kids do we need to sample for smoke monitoring guidelines? And that's a number between 500 and 800 fish. We take our detailed sample from there. If it's up to 100 fish of any species, the idea is to sample throughout the entire sample of fish that you've got there, so you have a representative picture of what's there. So if it's 100 fish of a dominant species, you want to try to get that 100 between A and B side, whether it's proportion, or it's granite, through the full sample that's out there, so it's representative of what's going on. I think that point's kind of getting lost.
What I'm having trouble with, it seems like people have been doing a process that's been satisfactory last year and are starting doing that this year, and people are satisfied with that. Are we talking about changing that? No?
Well, the reason we're talking about it, Bill, is because when the Fish Passage Center came out with their documentation for our new procedures, in there it said clipped and unclipped. So what we had been doing before was instantly doubled.
So
I think so.
Go back to that would mean 400 fish, essentially, right? I mean, potentially. I mean, unless you use the fish passage plan language, which says
predominant species.
Aim for the predominant species. Get 100 fish of that species.
That's what the fish passage plan currently says.
Yes.
There's nothing in the fish passage plan or even in the FPALM discussions that I've heard. They're talking about clip type. So that right there, we can just eliminate the whole clip type.
That's fine with me.
As
yes.
A factor in this discussion.
Yes.
So that instantly should simplify this dramatically from what the original confusion was.
Nothing's changing now.
So that was that would have been up to 800 fish at
200.
Yeah, I mean, but I mean, how many times would we be collecting 400 fish under this? Like.
The second week in May.
our sample tank can have, we've had up to 6,000 fish in our sample tank.
Yeah.
We will not be detailed subsampling 600 fish.
No.
We seldom get over 300. And the problem is, we have to get through those fish, we got to get them on a barge, and during the peak peak collection, you've got peak flows, you've got a barge sitting on it on a barge dock, rocking and rolling, and we want to move those fish out of there. So we're going to look at X number of fish, and it really doesn't matter how many thousands are in a sample tank. We want to get them done and out the door, and they are taken over a 24-hour period. You have a very good representation of what has happened over the 24-hour period. The scaling is also taken on the full sample, so to look at 800 fish is outside the range of reason.
So, what's the issue?
So, I think that a lot of this, there isn't really an issue.
So we're saying 100 fish of the predominant species?
Yes.
So remember what
yes.
That's why I
yes.
want to make it clear. So, yes. And other species?
I think take what you get.
Take what we have time to do.
Really cool. So, you're just getting, how many are you going to get? So,
how many
I don't think there can be a set number.
Are you trying to say that you want
a set number
about the 100 feet?
You
want
to
get a cap of?
I just want an idea of what I should tell people to do so that they can go out and sample the fish that they need to sample. We're not really answering the question. We're just saying what have you done in the past? What I'm asking for is what do we need to know? What do we need to be able to get, as Rick was asking before, to get a good handle on the condition of the fish? What do we need? How many fish do we need to sample? That's the question.
It sounds to me like we're doing that.
How do we do it?
The procedure that has been used does that. And it's acceptable.
Okay, so how many fish are we going to get a day for conditions?
John Day and Bonneville, I don't think we should change anything there. Alternating, you have the four predominant species. You alternate them every other day, 100 each. Clipped, non-clipped isn't an issue.
You know, that's really clear.
It's, yeah.
I know how many
that,
fish they're going to get.
Well, yeah, but that this transport issue is, what do we need for transport as far as the weights? What's our size? 100 predominant.
Weights.
And it's the fish condition. Is that the same?
Fish condition is usually a smaller number of fish than what we need for transport.
Yeah.
So fish condition, I heard 30.
So if we handle fish for transport, we automatically got enough fish for these game.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. What other conditions are you recording that are the detailed versus your sampling versus your overall large sample you're doing? You're doing distilling on your large sample, right?
You do, you know, your FDOT, lengths, weights, and all that detailed condition.
All that.
That's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm trying to get out.
Yeah.
FDOT.
The old FDOT, 91 to FDOT. We still call it that.
1991 FDOT.
So is it 100 predominant?
So
it's probably established.
I mean, that makes sense to me. I mean, if you do 100 and you get 100 predominant, you're done. Mm-hmm. And whatever else is in there is in there.
Yeah. I mean, if it seems like what you're wanting, you're more interested in knowing the absolute maximum cap more than you're interested in
a target. I'd like to know, from site to site.
A target?
Yeah.
A target is 100 fish of the predominant species in the river. That's the target. But it seems like you're not asking for a target. You're asking for what's the maximum possible number of fish.
Well, no, if it's 100 of 100 steelhead, great. But now it sounds like from Fred he's going to collect 100 of other species if he's got them in a sample.
Never said that. No,
that's
what never said that.
Just did.
Never said that.
Okay. So you just
I said I will sample the other fish.
Of course.
But I'm not looking at 100 of each species because I may only have 5 sockeye in the collection in my sample.
Okay. So the other number of fish are basically bycatch. You hit your 100 species you target, and whatever you get in the bycatch of sampling 100, you go ahead and examine those too.
Right.
Okay.
Whatever coho,
exactly.
Whatever.
Shoot
for target 100 of your species.
And so you're going to look at other species as well.
Right. Whatever you get.
Incidental catch.
Where you reach 100 steelhead, and then you'll stop doing the condition sample, essentially.
If
that's the predominant species.
Ideally, you spread it out so you sample, you take your 100 steelheads while you're trying to sample.
So you're not going to be done.
You're not taking the first 100 steelheads and stopping. You spread your samples out so it's representative.
Okay.
So what you pick up on your other species depends upon the relative abundance.
Well, we discussed this in the email. If you read my email, I invite you down to participate in the sampling, and then you'll get an idea of what this is about.
Believe me, I've been there.
Okay. So,
you're not going to take your 100 of that predominant species out of the first 3 groups of fish. You're going to be spreading that out over the course of the whole sample.
I understand.
So by the time you get to 100 steelhead,
you have
X number of other bycatch in there as well.
And you're going to be conditioned on all of those fish as well.
Okay.
If I have time.
Because you keep asking for the target, we keep telling you the target. But it seems like you're wanting it back. So let me ask a quick question. Okay. So can we, if we set a cap of the target is 100 fish of the predominant species in the river, and we will not do detailed condition sampling on more than 200 fish as a cap. Does that work?
You said 300 a few minutes ago.
Why are we doing this?
Not more.
Why are we doing this?
You set a cap. You have your target of 100. That drives your sampling protocol. Mm-hmm. And to me, that seems to be all you need.
But that doesn't seem. Jerry, are you on problem with that?
The 200 fish of the, that Bernie said, okay, that makes sense to me. But this other one seems like it could be anywhere from 0 to 100 fish of the other species, and that's, I'm just trying to clarify.
If the sample is random, and I'm looking at fish of different species for each batch that comes in, because if I have 2,000 fish, I may have 20 batches of anesthetized fish. If it's random, I can't possibly look at 100% steelhead, can I?
What do you mean?
If the fish that I am looking at that come in with each batch is...
You sure could. I mean, you could look at those for a detailed condition. Of course you could. And then the rest of them, you don't look.
That's not the way we do it.
That wouldn't be representative.
It's not the way we do it.
I
That's why I encourage you to come see what sampling is about.
Why can't you just say 100 cap, whatever else is in the sample, you do detailed condition on it and call it good? I mean, is that an issue?
Cap the other species at 100?
And cap them at 100 if there's more than 100.
So if, you have 50,
if for some reason it switches in your sample and you're like, wait,
because
look at this.
You know, you got 49% Chinook and 51% steelhead.
So the first 100 of one species. First 100 of one species, whatever that one is,
then you're done.
You're done.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fine with me.
Hey.
Is the weight information on the other species necessary for transportation estimates or just not?
You need it.
There's two urgencies here. One urgency is get good data, enough data, plenty of data on your condition, your species comp. And the other one is to get that
barge
weight data to get the fish, the barges on the way. At McNary, we don't, the correction factor is critical, but it does not change. It changes so little from day to day. I can use the previous day. I don't care if it takes them all day to do that sample. I can use the previous day's confidence to load that barge and get it on the road. There is the issue of 2 day hold, 48 hours, and you're supposed to get all those fish on that barge or in that sample before it can leave if it's a 2 day, unless we wait for that. Now, on the snake, maybe that's not the case. Maybe they have such a radical change from day to day of a correction factor that you've got to have that pretty accurate to keep from overloading.
My
species percent and a correction factor.
Because it changes daily.
So that kind of puts a more of a
snake varies a lot.
Yeah.
So for the purpose of this sample size discussion, when you hit 100 of any one species,
you're done.
Sampling.
For that species, right?
So that you can continue on to post the rest
of everything.
All of it
to cease. Once you hit 100 of your steelhead, you're done.
For all species?
For all species.
What if I still have fish coming in the sample?
You're done.
Well, your goal is to take the 100 fish.
Sure, I know, but why 100 fish?
Right. Over the entire sample.
Get the information out to the transportation.
Pardon?
Get the information out to the holder for the hump for the transportation.
That can't be done until you're done with the sample.
But you never do more than 100 of a
specific group.
No.
You never do that. But most of the time, you have one or two groups, you reach 100, and the rest are just very minor. And
yes,
you don't
they
really
are.
Have that many.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And you stretch that out for the whole sample.
Right.
So that if just the big fish come in at the end, you know,
you've
got it stretched out
through
the whole sample.
Right.
You don't just grab big fish for the first 10 batches and say, oh, I'm done. Now hand me all the little fish. It's little fish, big fish.
Yeah, the way it should be.
You only did that 100%. Well, you got you 100 of your predominant species on the days where the barge is sitting there. You got to get that barge on the road. But those days that are off days, there's quite a few days at snake that the only barge every other day. Mm-hmm. On those every other days, there's not a barge there. Go ahead and work a higher number. Take a little longer if you need longer. Or is that
gets back to the basic question. What is the sample size that we're happy with? How big a sample do we need to have confidence in those numbers? Can we lower that 100 down to 50 and say we're pretty sure that 50 fish represent the population?
Well, we're 30 earlier, so maybe 50 would be enough.
I know, that's what I'm saying. Why I'd love to cut down the sample size because, you know, frankly, what we're doing this year takes 40% longer than we've done in the past. So if we could cut it down from 100 to 50, now that we've decided on 100, you know,
we finally got to 100. But yeah, that would help.
So you're saying
I'm saying for all sites, if the managers, the regional fishery managers, would be happy with a sample size of 100, I mean of 50 rather than 100, I'd be happy.
Are we mixing issues here?
Are we talking
about condition factor monitoring, or are we talking about sampling?
Because
it's
things.
Two different things.
Condition details.
Yeah,
condition details. I think you're trying to. From what I'm hearing, everybody's mixing in sampling requirements for determining weights on loaded fish into the barge with condition factoring. And you're talking about two different things.
Could we separate them?
No, they're the same thing, because the only place you can get your weights is from the detailed subsample.
So it's the same.
The condition data is different.
the condition data is different.
Condition data and fish condition injuries.
Yeah, but you're still going to get your lengths and weights off of those fish that we're looking at for condition.
Right, it's the same. You're taking the weight from the conditioned fish.
Exactly.
Yes.
So,
but you have two separate data sets. And the only data set we're worried about in this conversation is regarding condition.
Right.
Yeah. So it's better to leave the other part of the issue away. Otherwise, this just is a mess of a conversation.
Well, how much... you say you're doing twice as much now because of the new requirements? It's taking twice as long? Or?
No, that was the clip-unclip issue. So that's
okay, that's gone. So can we stick with 100? Predominant fish. Stop your sample.
For condition.
Yes, for condition.
For condition.
For condition.
Which also is used for transport.
Thank you.
You also use those?
Anybody have a problem with that?
Fine. And then I raised the question after that decision point.
Can we go lower?
Can we go lower?
Well, let's start with 100 and see what happens.
Yes.
I think everybody's happy with 100, but yes. Go lower. I wouldn't go lower. I think I'd stay at 100. See what happens.
Mel,
all your weight,
even as it is,
sub-sample.
Right.
Don't take any weight off your general sampling.
They're Tom Lars, you call in?
Counting and...
Yes, if Tom's on there. All right, who's on the phone?
In an email.
Yeah. Is this
Tom? Tom, you have anything to say about sample size?
Oh, dear God, you people talk a lot.
Yes, we do.
Basically, the whole gist of this whole thing is we're going, like, what's the minimum sample we can get and get the information that we need that's critical? That's all we're asking is, like, can we do with 100 fish, 50 fish? That's all we're asking is basically a review of the process and how to minimize fish handling. Because I think most people say, you know, if you don't have to handle fish, it's probably a better thing. But you do need to handle some fish to get the critical information we need. So what's the best way of doing that? That's kind of the impetus of this whole discussion. I'm not sure why it got so... difficult, but so yeah, I think the 100 fish sound good. Let's see how it goes. If there's a way to do it better, let's figure it out.
All right.
So for this year, 100.
Yes.
Yeah. One more last question for you.
Just for the record, I'll concur with Tom Moore. This is Dave Wells. I joined maybe seems like 3 hours ago, but the comment was only a half.
Thanks, Dave.
For your weight information, maybe it doesn't really matter too much. Say, for example, you only have a couple of little sockeyes in your sample. You're going to basically determine the average weight based on two fish or three fish.
Yeah, that's all I got.
Two little sockeye aren't going to skew the weight
that much. We've got variability, but when we start getting with the snicker, it gets a little funny sometimes with your subs, your yearlings, where the variability in weights can be quite a bit.
No. What's the question?
The question is, when you have your overlap of your dual spring chinook and your yearling balls released from lines right now, do you get this overlap in those two groups where they're both roughly the same length, they're different weights?
They're not the same length. The fall chinook are a different looking fish. We record them as a lion's carry fish. We take weights on them too. So they're all averaged out in the end.
Okay. But you're going to have your primary dominant species. Yeah, that's probably not going to be a big deal because your dominant species is still going to be chinook. Sure. Even though they're maybe two different groups of their of different size.
Shouldn't be an issue if it's a random sample.
It's not random. Yeah, it's not a problem.
It's not random.
It's close sometimes. Fish tend to stack up.
All right,
to wrap this up, the final number is 100 fish of dominant species in the river. That's the target.
Yep.
For the transport project and the 100 two species of the predominant. Alternating other day in our
life. Actually, I'd like to actually clarify and hopefully reduce. If we're going to just do, if our target is 100 of the predominant species and we have equal proportions of chinook and coho, can we
250 of each. That's 100 fish. The dominant species proportions approximately equal.
It's whichever one comes out 100 first. So, in your sample, it should be fairly proportionate.
Well, if they're proportionate in number, then I could get 50 of each and call it a good sample. For, you know, if we're agreeable to the fact that, you know, the condition, in fact, the conditions are roughly the same between species, not a lot of difference between species.
How long does it take to work up 50 fish in a detailed sampling?
How depends on the fish you got in the sample.
I mean, how long does it take to work up 50 fish? And we touch them.
That's a whole different ballgame now, Steve. With this new touch,
how long?
An hour.
Look at 50 fish.
It takes you 15 seconds to actually do the digitizing, but you may only have 50 fish total in a batch. Now you want to get them out of the batch within 3 minutes. You don't want to have them staying in the anesthetic long. So you've got sorters on the other side of the table that are identifying, enumerating these fish, while you may look at only 10 out of that batch.
Sure.
So now we have to send another batch in, and it's going to take her 3 minutes to anesthetize the fish up there, and then they have to come down, and I'm going to look at a certain number of that group. You're asking the question that requires, it could take you an hour. It could take you 45 minutes. It could take you an hour, 15 minutes. It depends on the day and the way things are flowing. 15 seconds to do roughly
one fish.
By the time you've dropped a fish, grab another one, clear your scale, put it in there, let the scale balance, push your weight, identify your fish, the clip code, the code wire tag, any injuries, save, add, or new, put it out, grab another fish. You've got 15 seconds wrapped up.
So when you get 100 of those predominant fish, you stop.
Yep.
Yes.
Even if you think it's 50-50, just the first 100.
Well, that's...
So I think what he's saying is you may end up with 200 then. If you're
yeah.
Close.
Understand.
Yeah, you're lying. But can we put that back to... Yeah. If it's close to 50-50, then just 100 total rather than end up being closer to 100.
Yeah, that is actually what I was trying to do.
Right, you're trying to reduce the sample.
Hour to do the, I think it could potentially take you an extra hour to do it in the manner in which you guys are discussing.
It could.
Find out.
Okay.
So,
is that hour critical to anybody?
If you're barging,
yeah. Waiting on the barge, yeah.
The lower river's going to be the same.
But right now,
that's reasonable.
But no, he's talking about 50.
Yeah.
50.
Right.
It's too predominant that he's like.
He doesn't want to do it.
Okay.
We got it.
Moving on.
How's that agenda looking?
So, Rick, did your sampling change then?
No.
They just agreed to it or no?
No, we did not agree to that.
Okay.
We have not.
Well, he said okay, so I just wanted to clarify.
We have not. We are going with the 100 of each predominant of the 4 species in the lower river, 2 every other day,
yep,
for a total of 200. The upper river is 100. When you get 100 fish, you stop your sample.
Yes.
And I see your point, but I think we need to have something decided right now so we can move forward on this and maybe come back to it another time when it does get to maybe a 50-50 and we can reduce the sample size. Because we can sit here and argue it all day.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be argued. I mean, it's just an attempt on my part to actually cut down the number of fish I have to weigh because it takes a lot longer.
I think this has been a painful enough 45 or 50 minutes.
So
if there's other bugs to work on, we'll
really
put them on put them on the next up home agenda for today.
Wait, I have one other question. So, Rick, you are weighing fish, even though we're not transporting in the lower river, and you'd like to get rid of that requirement. Because we never did it in the past, and now you have to do it, and that's what's slowing you down ultimately, right?
That is correct.
Yeah.
So why are non-transport sites weighing fish, would be the question, and is that something that we need them to do?
Good question.
I think it's useful data. I mean, I would argue for it. It's useful data because we get requests from researchers about fish length information. I'm not saying we get it every day, but it's something we can get requested. You got your hands on that fish, and you're doing detailed condition on that fish. Weight isn't that big of an additional piece of handling on that fish to do to get that data.
But it sounds like it's adding additional time, and it is a significant increase in handling of that fish.
But how much time did it take him to do his fish?
But is it worth handling the fish that extra amount of time, especially when water temperatures warm up?
Right. Yes. I don't have an answer.
I mean, if we don't need that data, then what's the point of taking it? Unless you get a request from researchers.
And that request, or the weight now is being collected because of?
Basically just a standard protocol for condition data.
Right.
So we want it, essentially that's it. So we're not
using. So if the core doesn't need it.
Yeah, I mean, the core doesn't need that data.
Okay.
So
John Day and Bonneville?
Do not collect weights.
Don't
collect weights. No
weight. Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
Unless there is a request from research through the Fish Passage Center to us, then we will entertain that.
It's my understanding, and it may be incorrect, but it's my understanding that it was Michelle's interpretation, and correct me, Jerry, if I'm wrong, but it was Michelle's interpretation of FPAC's recommendation to standardize smoke monitoring. And she interpreted that to mean
Same at all sides, right?
Right here?
Yeah, that's essentially the idea.
So for FBOM to say, don't collect weights at John Day and Bonneville, not that I'm opposed to it, I'm not. I'm just saying, I kind of got the impression FPAC, or at least Michelle's interpretation of FPAC's recommendation.
From who?
It came from Michelle?
Well, no, the overall goal of standardizing the condition monitoring came from FPAC.
The impetus that came from is that we were getting different injury type reports for a couple of projects, which was sending different messages. It looked as if we could have the same standardization of injury and condition. I don't know if weight was, it was more just the injury, because if you see five fish that had a bunch of injuries, but that was making it look like 100 fish, you want something differently. So we want that all standardized so we understand what we're getting. I don't think we have thought greatly about weight. Dave Wills, if you're still on, you can talk to that. I don't know which weight one of our overriding criteria wants to take a look at.
Now, I don't recall it being specifically discussed. And I think if you just walk up to anybody and say, oh, what's that fish's condition? Somebody might think physical, somebody might think traditional condition factor. Now, maybe some people are using that weight information and trying to do that. I know if the fish are all long and skinny, it's a big difference if they're the same length and fat. So, you know, who's using that information? I'm not sure, but it would be useful if it's not impacting the jobs and the people at the project.
Well, Dave, I'm hearing that it does increase the sample size, so it'd increase the time in the sample, so it would impact the fish condition or the handling stress. So I would say don't take the weights unless there's a specific reason for it.
Well, that's what I was hearing too, Bern.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you know, we don't have a problem if there's a researcher out there that says, "Hey, you know, I really need this," then requests it. But it really doesn't make sense to take the weights.
Hold fish longer than you need them.
The system that we had at Granite, what we have now, records length and weight very quickly. one of the things that we have at Grant, any place we're doing research, one of the questions we get is what size of fish. We need these fish a certain size.
But we're not talking...
We're talking lower river.
We're talking lower river. It's valuable information for us to have. The cost of collecting it is relatively small. Bing, bing, you've got it.
It's not a bing, bing for Rick.
One of the things on condition factor that they said we don't use. You look at condition factor for your yearling chinook at Granite. That's off up here. First 5-6 weeks, it goes down. Then you start to see it going back up. You look at it for sub-yearlings. First of late middle of June, early June. That's up high, drop down, then that's going back up. So the condition factor by itself has long been an indicator of physiology of moving smolts. And that information is there. And I think it's an asset to have.
You're saying at Lower Granite, right?
Yeah.
They're talking Lower River.
We're talking Bonneville.
Bonneville and John Day.
You see that living project.
But the question is, do we add a new requirement at Portland District projects for weight when it was never captured before?
That's all.
Right. And I think the answer is no.
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 Okay, that's what I have.
No? Okay.
Okay, then,
Got enough?
I got it.
All righty. So we can now move on to the agenda. Cross out number 8. Okay, the first one, Sacagawea. Vet and draft fish passage language.
What I'd like to do is propose that we write the language for the interparty once it comes back in service, because it's only a couple months away. So would you like me to take a stab at that, or is that something that...
unit priority language?
I would like to take a stab at what we would do once the bank's back in service.
I'm sorry.
Ice Harbor, we've been doing it differently for the last several years because Sacagawea Bank got burned out. It wasn't representative properly in the fish passage plan as to what we're actually doing, but the operators know the procedure. And so instead of rewriting it in the fish passage plan for now and then writing it again for when they're back in service, I was proposing we go for a new write and hash over what we want to do once the bank is no longer an issue.
Scott, would this represent something like a 2002 type operation criteria?
Sure. You know, 1 and 2 is your highest priority. You run them around the clock and not turn them on and off. Like sometimes we used to switch back and forth.
You know,
so whatever it is, now that this isn't, there's no longer a problem. What is our standard operating procedure? And so I think it'd be time well spent to write that criteria instead of trying to write the current.
Right.
How we've been getting by for the last 3 years.
We've got a band-aid criteria now.
Right. Right. So let's work on the new fix.
Got it. Yeah.
So why don't you work with Walla Walla on that and bring it to FPOM?
Okay. Super.
Can never find it.
All right. 3.2 we're going to skip because Ann said she does not have that. 3.3 is Appendix L comments from the region. FPOMs provide comments through Tammy and they're posted to the website.
There's been no comments.
No comments.
So I'm going to take that off of there.
We'll just X this one out. 3.4 is my action on the Bonneville Powerhouse 1 Grizzlies. I'm working with our small projects engineer, similar to the one that did the Dave Herson release site at Bonneville. It's going to cost some money, which I don't have right now, so I'm going to have to see if I can get some money at the end of the year to have her look into it. I don't feel too comfortable having this certain engineer. I know what you guys went through, and I understand what you went through. So I'm gonna work on it. That's all I'm going to say.
Thank you, Bernie. Thank you, Bernie.
Yeah.
I think I know what a grizzly is, but I'm not sure.
It's a big
drain modification.
It's a big bear.
Stuff them in the draft tube drain. No, it's no problem.
Actually, you want to describe it?
It's not domed. It's just a gravity-fed drain in the bottom of the draft tube, as at Powerhouse 1 as opposed to Powerhouse 2, where there are side drains and they don't just do that sucking motion. And I don't know why it's called a grizzly. It's been called that.
The grizzly is a drain versus a wall drain.
Right. anyone
it's
holds
both
sides of your thumb on
okay.
it.
The grizzly is a coarse growl.
Big growls.
But so it's not something to increase the whole area by giving the grain by going it or something.
That's what we're going to do.
Basically, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's a proposal.
Okay. So grizzly is a floor grain. Okay.
Thank you for asking that question because I didn't want to ask it.
There is.
We have a question.
Yes. Okay.
Was there a question?
Yeah.
Will's do the next one. 3.5 entrance gate elevations openings. Dave Wills is going to complete his table and send it to Tammy.
Yeah, Dave Wills apologizes, but that kind of dropped off of his radar screen. He's going to work on it for next iteration of the FPP.
All right. Thanks, Dave. Okay, there was a 3.6 is the lamprey issue at Ice Harbor and John Day. Miro and Greg were going to look into torpedo screens or the air burst systems.
We're looking right now, putting this in with the good planning situation because of the situation, you know, because of the, where the location of these screens are and the criticality of this thing, too. So we're bringing this in with the lamprey group.
And this is the intake for the cooler?
Yeah, for the cooler, for the generator, the oil cooler. It's a, you know, it's a critical system. There's a couple of entrances, like I've told the group
10
before.
Inch. 10 inch?
Yeah, and you know, it's from the scroll case or from the floor bay. You know, we want to make sure we're isolating the right location and that stuff. So this is a little bit more than just putting a little screen screw on. It's not going to work that way. We need more information after this.
Okay.
So we're going through a team on this.
So are you actually talking with Larry and Miro or on this one?
Well, Larry should be part of it too, yes. Okay. But we're going through PDT.
Oh, okay. Got a PDT, project development team. Okay. The Dave Herson Memorial Truck Pad.
Well, first thing I want to say is Dave's not dead yet.
So. Oh, I thought we just called it the Herson Flush. Sorry.
Yeah, that too. Anyway, there hasn't been much activity on that. Trucking won't start until August anyway, so it's not a real big
critical
push, but the small project engineer is working on it. I haven't seen results of plan changes yet.
All right. So we'll just keep this on the agenda until you can provide that. 3.8 fish passage plan changes. Many comments added to Appendix B. They were updated and sent to Dan File, which have been included in the fish passage plan.
They're done.
Was posted to the website, the final, because of the fish operating plan for the spring operations. It was delayed, so there is no hard copies available today. Dan sent those to print, and when does he expect those?
He did not say.
He did not say, but they usually take a couple of weeks to get them printed and assembled.
The next two move to next month.
So we'll have hard copies next step, Paul.
I would expect so.
Okay.
In a nice lavender color.
What's that?
We'll have another special meeting with McNary to deliver.
Yeah. We should have this meeting with McNary to deliver.
No.
But Vern, on the other side, then it is final on the website, correct?
Correct.
All right. Just want to make sure of that.
3.1, some change forms, Appendix K. Bob Cordy was going to write up the language.
This will be next month.
This is, he did not.
3.9 and 3.10 will move to next month.
3.9 and 3.10 are next month. 3.11, the standpipe at the John Day Smolt Monitoring Facility. I believe you guys did some repairs.
The maintenance found an acceptable location behind the screens and relocated the standpipe.
Excellent. And 3.12 is the adult fish facility at Bonneville. Gary wanted to have another meeting as a follow-up from last August, and I will be setting that up probably in May. So I'll be sending out an invitation to that meeting. Since that August meeting, we have done some things. CritFix put together some passage numbers on adults, and the Corps put in some picket leads that are parallel to the flow, so we'll see how that goes once we get into the sampling season.
Where's this one?
The adult fish facility at Bonneville. Some updates. Tie crane repair. The tie crane's boom contractor went through the second round of testing on the heat treatment process, and it's passed. Our engineers have accepted it. So they are now developing a heat treat submittal for the entire boom and hope to have that by the end of next week and then start manufacturing the boom. And when it shows up, I'm not even going to guess. The end of the summer, I would hope. So in time to do some work, I would expect it to be ready by August. We'll see.
Do you know if they're going to position the 80-ton crane on the Bonneville 2 side? Until the tie crane's done, or is it going to stay over on the first part of the side?
You guys have an 80-ton?
The new crane that was working on the nav block, it's going to be back on the Washington side. I don't know if they're going to truck it all the way back around to the Oregon side after the tie crane comes back or not.
Okay. But for shutting, we have no way to close it unless we station it on the Washington side.
Right, it'll be over on Washington for now.
Bonneville T-11 and 12 outage.
Hey.
What?
Bon, Unit 11 returned to service date. You're looking at the old one. Jesus. Unit 11 was supposed to come back in spring, but it won't be back until the end of summer, so that may affect some of the research that was planned for the BGS. It's not coming back till September.
Not back until September.
Yeah, Schwartz was supposed to get more information on that.
Crazy.
This is Dave. The voice is kind of faded out. What was Tammy's discussion on Unit 11?
Well, Ben, do you have an update on the Unit 11 return to service date? Is it still late summer?
Yeah, September 1 is the latest factory, but I don't know if that's how firm that is.
Okay, and that's the only unit out at P2 right now?
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Bonneville T-11 and 12 outage, 4-3.
Yes. Today is the last day for comments on this coordination effort, and the only comments I've gotten back were from NOAA Fisheries, so I just wanted to give everyone a chance to give me their final comments. All right. Then the project will go ahead with the T-11 and 12 outage as coordinated.
I mean, but how did you address Gary's comments? Because I had the same comments. If those units are needed, are we going to operate them regardless? That kind of what Dennis looked like his response.
For the T-11 and 12, the comments I had from Gary was that there were no concerns with this. You might recheck that. Yeah, that's right.
Hold on.
No, he was okay with it because of the two-hour outage. It was only 2 hours. Did I not include it? God damn it. Oh, here it is. No, where did it go? Did you mess with my agenda?
I didn't touch anything.
Blame it on Bernie.
I will. Damn it. Is it not print? Anyhow, when I talked to Gary, he didn't have many concerns since it was only the 2-hour outage. Well, where did you find it? Page 3. I don't have page 3. All right. Well, this one doesn't have any comments. Basically, there's been no comments with the changes other than Gary's verbal comments that the 2-hour outage was acceptable since it's at night and it's only 2 hours. So if anyone has any additional concerns about that, let me know. The comments from before dealt with different dates and different hours of outage. So now the new dates are the 15th and 16th from 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock at night. 2000 to 2200. No comments, all right.
Tom, you good?
Yep, that'll work.
Okay. 4.4, John Day STS crane. This is just kind of an update. If you heard, it blew off its rails last week. There were 80-mile-an-hour gusts, and it busted from its shackles and rolled on down the powerhouse.
Wow.
And off the rail. So they jacked it back up and put it back on, and there wasn't much damage except for the decking.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a lucky bullet we dodged there. They are putting on new brakes and probably be a new protocol as well.
Was that last Thursday at
60 miles? It was Tuesday, 80-mile-an-hour gusts, and it just sailed on down, and nobody must have been out on the deck watching anything because it was so nasty.
Yeah, 80 miles an hour, I wouldn't be on the deck.
I wouldn't be on the deck at
80-mile-an-hour
wind. I don't know what the plan is, but I'm sure they're gonna beef it up.
We did with rekindled bicycles. Something's pretty heavy.
Wow.
To the McNary,
yeah.
ESPS installations.
Yeah, so as people recall, we, in honoring the language in the Fish Accords, we put the ESPSs off, we delayed installation of those until this week, so just this Tuesday, process of getting those ESPSs installed was initiated. I think we have units 1 through 3 already done and intend to continue on with installation. I think the language in the fish passage plan says that we'll have that wrapped up, close the business a week from today.
Today.
And that is still the plan. We're on target to hit that. So just an update to remind people that it's changed this year and we're moving forward on it.
Keep going.
Okay.
Tim Newell, make that a standard operating procedure. Or do we want to talk about that?
Yeah. I think it will be. It's my intention right now that the only thing that kept us from making it permanent in the fish passage plan was just the date. We want it to be not tied to the 6th through the 16th, but tied to the work week. So, like, this year it was, you know, the 6th through the 17th or whatever, to hit the Monday, and then
Thursday.
So
we're going to change form that addresses it that way, and this will be our standard operation from here on out.
Really?
You'll say something like starting the first Monday and
second
Tuesday in April.
Right.
So, yeah, that's every first Monday in April. Yeah.
Unless we learn new information, but that's the plan. All right, moving on, and this a quick one that isn't specifically mentioned, but I thought you guys would specifically be interested. So the gate hoists for the TSWs. I'll start by spill starts tonight at 0001 hours, and the plan is to do that. An issue came up just at the end of last week, where I learned that there was a problem with the modified gate hoist seemed to be flopping
flopping around a little bit.
Flexing.
I think is the word that I heard.
I don't have one
here
now.
And so as a result of that, project personnel noted it, began to build stabilizers for that. My understanding is that they're working feverishly right now. They have them built. They're getting them welded on so that we can still hit that target tonight. So, just want, in case you've heard that there's issues, that's an issue.
And if you can't do it tonight, you're going to just save the right volume, but just on a different spell pattern.
Okay.
Right.
Yep. Okay. So, okay, then moving on to 4.6 McNary entrance velocity. So if you recall, a couple of weeks ago, I sent out an email with an FPALM request on developing a test to improve, do something that we think will improve conditions for land braking. And really the concern is, you know, lower velocities that will get Lamprey into the ladder without changing the velocities in a way that will impact adults finding the ladder. And so we also didn't like the idea of shutting a unit or a fish pump on and off, because that's never a good idea for operating big pumps like that. We have enough problems as it is. We don't want to turn them on and off more than we have to. So the end point, on at least the initial end point of this was, well, can we reduce or can we lower the entrance weir so that we can not screw off fish pumps, keep the same flow, the amount of water passing through the ladder, through the entrance, the same, but lower the entrance weir so that we can possibly lower the entrance velocities for the benefit of lamprey at night. And so that was the reason for the email that was sent out a couple weeks ago. Derek Fryer, Martin Allman, are here today to talk about how the test went and discuss a path forward. So that, there's my turn.
Well, just a little bit of background. This was something that was brought up in the Accords, and in the Accords 10-year plan was to investigate the feasibility of reducing entrance, fish ladder entrance flows at night to benefit lamprey entrance into those ladders. And so our team took a look at, you know, starting to determine the feasibility of what is the capabilities of doing something like this at Snake River projects in the McNary Dam. And you know, Martin has, you know, done the bulk of the work on this, so I'm actually going to see if he'll walk through what we actually did for the test. But what we determined was messing around with hydraulics in the ladder probably wasn't a very good idea to reduce flows to try and get a reduced velocity at the entrances. And I've got a handout here. I didn't bring copies for everybody, and I can email the results that Martin has typed up for this type of test. But basically, we just Martin determined that just dropping those entrance weirs down to the lowest possible elevation you can get them to and reduce the head differential while still maintaining the same flow of water to maintain the traction into the tailrace was the best option. So we came down as a group and did that and took a look at the conditions, and Martin's gone through a few rough calculations to determine how much we actually changed velocity for those entrances. And this is just for the south Oregon short ladder here at McNary. So if you want to talk a little bit about what we did.
Sure. We started off looking at reducing flow, which was raising the upper weirs, which was not very effective. Closing the tainer valve of the gravity feed supply line, which was labor intensive. And actually shutting back the pumps, which has mechanical wear and tear issues. And none of those were really found to be efficient or even effective. Past studies indicate that when you start monkeying around with the flow down the ladders, we can set up some oscillation in the ladder. So all in all, reducing flow was thrown out as a viable option. But reducing the weir, lowering the weirs seems very reasonable in maintaining the same level of discharge. So we got the attraction flow, and we're able to cut our velocities down about by half. So normally the velocities out the entrance are on the 8 feet per second range, 8 to 12 feet per second. tail water condition we tested, which was about 266, 267, we got those velocities down around 4 feet per second. We can gain additional reduction in flow velocity if we lower the non-overflow gates, so the ones north of the powerhouse. So if we lower both gates, then we can further reduce the velocities on the south shore, which was our focus. And then I suppose you do gain some benefit by reducing the velocities on the non-overflow weirs as well. Logistically, it worked well. We had the project operator actually come down and adjust those gates manually on the tail race deck. But I understand that can be done from the control room, and the system can possibly be automated so that it, off of what control system is that?
There's a PLC program.
So there's a possibility we can program that so at whatever chosen time frame, hour at night, hour in the morning, you want to lower those and raise those, that can be programmed. And, the only concern that I have now is as the tailwaters drop, we're not going to gain that same level of reduction in flow. And as our powerhouse operation changes, either by the current fish passage plan or changes in fish passage plan or volume of spill, we change the gradient below the powerhouse. So that can change the entrance performance. So what I would recommend is that we continue to evaluate this under varying tailwater conditions. As the tailwater river flows drop, tailwater drop, you know, we just evaluate the conditions before we implement it, you know, blindly. Also, as the powerhouse changes, there is a possibility we can actually get reverse flow from the north entrance and increase our discharge out the south entrance. So,
Mark, can you raise the gate anymore?
Yeah, we can raise the gates. There's two sections of gate, each are about 9 feet. So those can be fully lowered, so where they're no longer in influence, or they can be raised up. And it was designed for additional segmental gates that can go in, and then you raise your weir gates even higher. So we can close it off. In fact, they're designed for dewatering a certain head differential across, so we can shut it down all the way, but that's not a permanent dewater.
Could you back up the pumps and then raise your gates up to get your velocity to stay the same?
Well,
a smaller cross-sectional area.
Part of the idea, I think, too, is getting the entrances down low.
Bring the gate up during the day, you have your pumps turned down, you bring them up, and then you can lower them some from that point, slow it down even more. But a way to back your pumps off.
But then you're compromising.
You could, then, right.
Well, that's what I'm asking. But is it a velocity thing or is it a volume of water?
One of the things we want to avoid is
depth,
on off on the pumps or.
Right. That's what I'm trying to back. Just find a place you could back them off to that would be acceptable. Yeah. By changing your cross sectional area or something, your velocity.
You could, but. When you bring it up like that, you end up with a smaller discharge, a smaller cross-sectional area coming out of the gate. It's not going to compete as well with the turbine discharge.
Right. In the long run, we have a system, and you might have an eductor down there or something that would actually give you the velocity when you want and shut it off if you didn't want it. So that's the thing you're looking for.
We are, our lamprey plan, 10-year plan, is to look at short-term operational improvements, long-term operational improvements, short-term structural improvements, and long-term structural improvements. And one of the things that we're gearing up for is a all-new gate design for this entrance that would be employed. We're looking at 2013 installation date. And we're just now gearing up to evaluate alternatives and concepts in that, of which, you know, anything's possible.
This south entrance right out here, does that have one gate or two?
Two
gates. Is one fully up?
Both are operated?
Both are operated.
Equally, okay. You just have to lower that one and that basically takes all your lateral. You don't have to do anything with the north entrance out by the
Well, that's what I was mentioning. We, under the conditions we tested, we can lower these and reduce our head differential to about 4 feet.
Right.
And that's with doing nothing on the north side.
Okay.
If we lower the north side, we can further reduce the head differential on the south by another 10 feet or foot.
Okay.
And so, but we can't get the north gates down as far. There's, it's undesirable to put the north gates down as far as we are able to put the south gates because of all the turbulence.
Sure. And you run into the risk of out there with the spillway and the powerhouse operator, you could actually have higher tailwater levels out there than the south. Yeah. Get reverse
under the condition we tested, we had, a foot higher tailwater on the south than we had on the north. Now, that was with no spill operation. If you change that, that's going to change. And so that's what I caution is we need to look at
and play around with that.
What velocity impedes lamprey passage? Is it 8 foot stops them, or is it velocity or attachment?
Combination, I'm sure. I don't think we have any biological criteria to say exactly what it is, other than giving them good attachment points, rounding things so they don't have a 90 degree into a jet, and reducing velocity as much as possible while still maintaining that attraction. Well, when they did the nighttime reduction test at Bonneville, there was some confounding factors going on, and part of that was because that was pretty much a different test than what we're doing here at McNary, where at Bonneville they reduced flow to get a reduced velocity. We're trying to maintain flow and reduce velocity if those that exist. And at Bonneville, at one of the entrances, I'm not totally familiar with the entrances, but one of the entrances that normally has a higher velocity, when they did the test, they got good attraction at that entrance, but they weren't a lot of lamprey that entered. And at the other entrance, they didn't get very good attraction, but they got the ones that did come to that entrance entered easier, and they entered at a more efficient rate. So it was kind of confounded. So what we're doing here is quite a bit different than what they're talking about there. And I know it's been in the one pagers and in the Corps 10-year plan that we'd evaluate Bonneville and see how well that worked before we moved to a different location to implement nighttime flow reduction tests. But I don't think really there's ever one set operation at one dam that's going to work for all of them. So that's kind of why we're moving out with looking at the feasibility here at McNary. And from what we looked at on the first test, we thought it was pretty successful. And that kind of brings me to our next point was, we sat down in house and talked about this and wanted to come up with a recommendation and bring that into the group and then open it up for discussion. And that recommendation is to move forward with a potential reduced entrance velocity operation, actually, for 2009 with some monitoring involved for adult salmon. So we make sure we're not messing anything up there and do a similar one-day block design to what they designed for tests at Bonneville, and just to make sure we're not messing anything up for adult salmon. So I think the way they set it up at Bonneville was one-day blocks, one day reduced flows, one night reduced flows, next night regular flows. And you're actually able to compare daytime counts of adult salmon between those two operations to try and get an idea of whether you're having an impact on the adult salmon run. So that seems like that's the main concern. And then the assumption would be that by doing this, we are providing a benefit for adult lamprey to get in with the latter scenario. So that was our recommendation potential for this summer for when the lamprey passes the project. And again, we have concerns over project folks keeping an eye on conditions and us coming down and keeping an eye on as conditions change to make sure something isn't getting wacky and we're not seeing the velocities and the conditions that we're shooting for. As far as a biological test on adult lamprey, I don't think we would be able to do that this year. There is a plan to trap and tag lamprey here at McNary Dam. We've had trouble with sample size in the past. So we don't currently have a plan to try and get a biological test specifically for lamprey, but we are doing nighttime video monitoring at the cat windows for lamprey this year. And did you happen to look and see what turnaround time was between when they reviewed the videos and when the data is available.
We're still working that out right now.
So there's a possibility to use the radio telemetry tag and the pit tag adult lamprey that will be used as part of a different study to sort of monitor whether this condition is actually providing that benefit. But we wouldn't have a full test, biological test, for whether this is really a great thing for lamprey or not.
I don't know, Bill, but I think you're going to have to write that up and at least talk to Gary about it. My concern off the bat is we're kind of running a test without, I mean, we don't know the benefits to lamprey. We're not set up with the tagging or the half duplex systems and all of that. So we're going to have to rerun it again, next year anyway. So, I mean, all we're going to see is if we're potentially adversely affecting salmon without any benefit to lamprey, and I don't know whether Gary's willing to go there or not.
And the other thing too is, there's some problems in counting lamprey.
Yeah.
Picketed leads. It's a big problem there too. So.
And really, the focus of this test really isn't, are we creating the ideal conditions for lamprey? Really, it's more.
What's the impact?
Are we having an impact on adults? If we are, on adult salmon. Are we having an impact on adult salmon? If we are, then I think this is going to lose steam in a hurry. If we're not having an impact on adult salmon, well, then we do need to get in further to see. Okay, are we actually having a benefit to lamprey? So we could sit back a year. We talk about this internally. We could sit and do nothing on this year. But then does that kind of set us back for the next year when we actually are able to gather some more information on lamprey? Is there some validity to going forward this year and just really monitoring if there's any impacts of this to adult salmon?
Is this an SET or where's the funding for monitoring?
I think the monitoring would be just the conventional ladder counts, and what you do is check your ladder counts and see if you're seeing a
difference
a trend.
Day after the test versus day after.
I think data might be good too.
So is that quick enough to see if you have a problem that you could react? What would be your off ramp for this if you see the impact?
I think it would be just to shut it down and record.
Right, but are we going to be able to turn around our monitoring quick enough to know that we're having a problem not a week later?
We get day counts. You have day counts. That's every day, right?
It's day time counts that we have. So right now, the only thing is, if we want to expand it to night time counts, that's a totally different thing. If we do plan on doing night time counts of lamprey, change the scope.
Right, but you're focusing on salmon this year, so we don't really need the nighttime now. It sounds like you have a daily, so if you write up a protocol as to how you would off-ramp yourself.
That would definitely be in the plan as far as how you test it, when you would, say, terminate the test, how quickly is the turnaround time between monitoring counts and being able to make a decision to say if there might be a problem as you terminate the test. You definitely have to explore that further, but I wasn't able to put something like that together. That would be something I would put together.
When you propose it would start if we did it this year.
That's the thing that would be in the plan that I need to look into is the run timing here at McNary Dam. But I'm assuming it would run from sometime in June through August and into September. There's still lamprey passing here.
Those are passes. That's something we could have you write up and put in the agenda for our next step. Bombers have to be decided soon.
I think there's probably, this is also a question for you, but as far as when you're writing something up and getting to F-Bombers, I think there's time to put it on the next
set it out for us to review, and then we can talk about it at the next meeting.
That's a little different than what we might need to do to start working on the project to implement the program.
Just notice that, hey, don't do it. Couple places of the mouse that are back in normal operation. Mm-hmm. And the adult counts are being taken every day anyway, whether we're looking at them for every other day change or not. So I don't think it's too big of an issue.
What time were you looking at
starting your operations each night, CCM each morning?
Well, kind of sort of the default time was what was used at the Bonneville Dam nighttime flow test, which I think was 10 at night to 4 in the morning.
Okay, that's fine. Because 4 o'clock is the shift. Mm-hmm. We've done a lot of nighttime fish counts. Yeah. I don't have that data, the hourly data. I don't want to have to dig that out for you, but...
The idea would be, I think, in my mind, would be able to, if you're comfortable extending those that duration that you're out to benefit lamprey, but to make sure that you're not impacting anything for salmon during that time.
I mean, that's what you're trying to learn this year, salmon, so you need to have salmon targets available.
The premise is that we don't see nighttime ladder passage, so we don't expect there to be any impact. But,
right. So that's we're not going to have any nighttime monitoring, so you do your day changes. So you're not going to see any.
But when you look at the next day's day counts, they have
predict detectors, which will show you time of passage.
The purpose is to see if we can affect salmon. The purpose is see if we can do this, which we think is going to be around that 6-hour window, as a long-term operation for the benefit of lamprey. If we implement that this in the long-term for the benefit of lamprey, will that have a detrimental impact on salmon?
When do we think lamprey pass? How many hours a day?
That's good at night.
Dan, do you know it? At Bonneville, isn't it mainly at 10 at night? Do you remember what they...
Lamprey
at Bonneville. Doesn't Mary get most of her lamprey passage in the middle of the night?
Yes, she does.
Is that at the window or at the end? Where's that at?
I'm thinking it's up through the lamprey pad of the lap systems, which are up above the count windows.
So what's the transit time? So it must be starting sooner than 10 to get her all the way.
I'm thinking it was something like 2 o'clock in the morning or whatnot.
The reason I'm asking is we may want to extend our window of opportunity for the lamprey at the entrance, and it would overlap with our current use for the salmon entrance. So there is a reason why you want to push it wider, because if you're going to try to balance your trade-off between the two species, you need to know if there really is an impact.
I would definitely try to include that in the plan that I would present to FPOM. I just didn't have time to go back and start researching what are the passage times for adult lamprey. What time do we think the majority are getting in the ladder? Sure. When are they passing?
And I wanted to bring it up here in the whole group so we can talk about why you'd want to extend it that you may have an impact on workers.
Has Idaho done any type of telemetry stuff with lamprey? With the adult salmon?
Yeah, they have duplex.
I'm not really sure.
They
have a feel for entrance timings.
Yes.
And that's for sure.
At Bonneville, anyway.
At Bonneville.
We have some data here. I just haven't been able to pull it together.
Sure.
Based on half duplex, pick tag, antenna detections, and radio telemetry detections, we should be able to determine when lamprey are trying to make it into those entrances that we have covered. And we should have all of them covered by RT radio telemetry.
So
I want to make sure if we're going to do this, if we're doing it at the time.
The first thing you want to look at is to make sure that they're
not. They may be entering in the evening or late afternoon.
Find that out.
So do you have something you could submit to FBOM and let everybody read it and look at your schedule and your design? And we can get back to you.
Yeah.
I think that's the way.
Well,
to
I'm not asking for an answer now. I'm just
right, but I think that now we've talked about it. I know that Gary's not involved. He probably wants to review it. Oregon's not on the line, so if you could submit that through Tim.
Yeah, this Thomas is one that I've been real quick on this one. We do support the operation more as we're looking at going to see it. We may not get the information we want exact from this year, but at the very least, it'd be a good pilot year. Take a look to see if we can do a full fish for next year, and we're just going. We're trying to figure out what the downside would be.
Yeah. So next FPOM is May 14th. So, Derek, do you think it's reasonable by, like, May 1, which is Friday, first day of May, to have that out, that I can email the plan out, so then we have almost 2 weeks to look it over? Good? Okay.
It would be good.
Derek, will that one?
It would be good if this is something that we're planning or would like to move into some sort of a test operation this year. Is that when we do get into our fish passage plan, spill powerhouse patterns, it would be nice to be able to come out and lower those gauges for another 2 hour period, hour and a half period, and just observe what's going on. So if there's an opportune time for us to do that, once we kick off our fish operations, that would be great. I don't know when else we would get a look at changing the dodge operation.
I would think you could get, I would think there'd be some sort of window in the middle of the day at the low semi passage or in between runs or something like that. You could probably do that. Again, contact Gary on that.
So I guess we'll do plan hours. I'll send out a similar email as I did 2 weeks ago, and we'll shoot for, and in that email we'll propose, a 2 hour window around the middle of the day, but I'll be sending that out when we get a time figured out sometime, maybe even the next couple weeks. Is that good?
I have a few copies of the report of the test we did. Is anybody interested in a copy?
I can email it.
We can email it too.
Let's do that.
Email it.
Okay. So Derek, will this include an observation of what changed in the fish weigh and when? Because the test was only on one day under a specific condition. Yeah. And it's like Martin said, we're going to do spill. We're going to have different tail raise elevations and all that. So.
I think the plan is initially, if this were to go forward early on in the season, we'd be coming out and taking some measurements to confirm what we're seeing, what we want to see. For sure, that's got to be part of the plan, otherwise we're kind of doing it blindly.
It's just the idea of running backwards in the channel.
John, look at the report, the report. Is there information you'd like to see reported that's not on there? Let us know.
Copies of that, if anyone wants, we have four copies now. I'll email this out to Tammy tonight.
I'll include it in the minutes.
Okay. Or tomorrow morning. So, but if anyone wants one of those four copies.
Good.
Obviously, if we've got flow moving upstream, we'll note that. Okay.
It seems like you
want to
look at lengthening and shortening. I'm not sure how long of a test period you're talking about, but and then also looking at the adult salmon counts.
When we talked about the change in day length, basically, or the change in night length, however you want to look at it, and that will be part of the option in the plan that I put together, whether we have a sliding window of when velocities are reduced and when they're brought back up to normal operating criteria. So it's a very good point.
I'm not real anxious to extend this test into times when we know we have peak salmonid passes, because you will reduce the attractiveness of the ladders. I mean, just by dropping the gates down to, it's not going to be the same, and adults are going to have a harder time finding it. My opinion, you're going to adversely affect
it. With that, it's a very, very, very complex system, and there's been a lot of studying and a lot of different data to get the system optimized to perform the way it's performing right now. And so
but if we can do it at a time, when we don't have much adult salmon passage one way or the other, then I think we're okay.
But I have a feeling that's why the 10 to 4 was decided on.
It was.
Right, but I bring it up is because at some point we're going to have to make hard trade-offs between the two species that aren't always compatible. And so at some point we have to start seeing what we're really trading on. That's
why we'll make that decision. But we're not. I don't know, Bill. You can overrule me. We're not there.
There's no way to measure the improvement unless they start doing spawning ground surveys or something. Because it can lead the system.
Excuse me. This is Dave.
Yeah.
I apologize. You guys are cutting in and out completely on and off, and it's been hard to follow. Plus, I these phone calls. So I'd like to just ask if somebody, Tim, somebody can prepare sort of a short summary and email me what's going to happen, because I'm kind of interested in this issue. And
yeah, Dave, what's happening is we're going to get a formal proposal put together. We'll email it out. Right now we're targeting May 1. In that plan that I email out around May 1, you'll see exactly what's being proposed. Right now, there's no decision's been made today that's going to impact operations at the project, but the decision has been made that you'll be getting a plan that may have an impact on operations, so just look for that report and review it when you get it.
Okay. All right. Thanks. And I apologize now, too, because I have to go and take care of another issue that came up.
I guess you can send that out to SRWD.
All right, thanks, Dave.
Thanks. Good to send members, but you might get a little broader oversight on that.
Sure.
Yeah. All right, so Lamprey nighttime counts.
This year nighttime counts will occur at McNary, Bonneville, and Granite Dams. We'll probably start at Bonneville around the 15th of June. All counts will end around the 30th of September. But McNary, we're starting about the 1st of July. And we're going to do the counts at Granite at the same time we're doing our sockeye passage counts, too. So it'll just be a matter of getting another species counted on at the same time. But again, there'll be extended sockeye counts in the 30th of August. Lamprey will still continue until the 30th of September.
So and what's the turnaround on the data?
We're discussing that. Well, it should be soon. For video count, it should be about 4 days.
Okay.
But then, you know, Lamprey is going to be a brand new thing this year for the counters. Learn a lot this year. We'll see what we can.
It'll probably be faster at the Mobile District projects than we'll be for Bonneville.
Yeah.
It's because it's not going to be that hard for us up here. Yeah. There. One. That could be really hard.
Yeah.
So we'll look and see what we got to do for modification next year, if needed.
All right, but are you actually going to count them, or are you going to count like square feet of the window that's covered or something like that? If you get into the thousands numbers.
I've gone over that protocol yet. It's just basically count one by one the ones.
Right, but some just have just a window full of them. They're sucked on, and so you might be able to go after doing the video. You may be able to look at the square feet that are covered, because over time they may not move, or they may.
It might not be a bad idea to talk with some of the folks at the University of Idaho who are trying to develop a counting methodology for nighttime counts for lamprey, because they physically sat and watched and counted ups and downs, and they may have a little bit of input.
I talked to her earlier this year about that stuff.
I don't know if they've come out with any.
I don't know if they've come out with it yet, but she did the counts last year. They're fun.
They ran every hour.
Into the trunk.
One for the ups.
Really?
Yeah, we'll look into it.
Okay.
Maybe you could substitute John Day as the bonnet.
You can substitute John Day.
It's a little easier.
4.8, some activities that are completed and will be completed tomorrow. Just an update. The GMF head box outage on the 19th of March is completed at Bonneville. Spillgate 17 setting is at 2 dogs, which is 2.98 feet. And we'll stay there, which is how many CFS?
It is, I can do this.
5,993.
Depending on head.
And tomorrow, Tammy will be out there taking the clearance on the ice and trash sluiceway to remove the scaffolding. Correct?
That is correct.
So, number 5, Ben Houseman. Yes, please.
Schedule to start on Monday the 13th.
is to test units 7 and 8, obviously 7 is already out for turbine rehab, so 8 will be out for a week, which will just change priority if necessary, but that's about all there is to it.
One more thing, testing at Bonneville Corner Collector Pit Tag Antenna will be the 13th and 14th. 14th and 15th. Unless you're bottles.
Okay.
So the Bank 7-8 outage is the one where I need to finalize the coordination form now that everyone's left. And I've only gotten comments from Gary. So if anyone else would like to say they support or don't support it, that'd be great. All right. Our fisheries carries the day. So, Ben, you can tell Schwartz you guys can move ahead with that.
Okay. Sounds good.
The Dow spillwall early start date, Bob Wertheimer is coordinating that with the region. Tammy's coordinating.
So you'll see that coordination form in here as well. Comments are due by the 15th. I thought somebody from planning had come to talk about this and answer any questions if there were any. If you guys have any comments, I haven't received any yet. So if you have
them. Darker shade of concrete.
They're not
going to
drop any grains, are they?
I will pass that along to Wertheimer to provide answers to those questions.
It's kind of bright out there.
It'll be covered with bird poop soon enough.
I noticed that this morning.
Whoa!
So I've only got comments from NOAA and from Idaho. In case anyone else...
Are you on agenda item 6, I'm assuming?
Yeah, early start date.
It's near as impossible to follow you guys right now.
Okay.
The only question I had was, Dave Benner brought up an issue. He was not able to be there today. He's had some delightful medical work being done. He was saying, since you guys are going to start early days, is there a way to mitigate the maximum full pool issue for Bonneville around November, October, when you have a chum spawning issue to alleviate some issues for flow? And he was asking if we're talking to look at the schedule, see if they're going to need to have the pool at maximum fullness at that time.
Yes, they are.
They're planning on it.
I guess the question is, since even if they're starting earlier, is there a way that they could, is there a way they can work so they may not need it during the time, what Dave was wondering? Because with that situation there and then with Chum, it could make things rather interesting for next year.
Right, we brought that up at TNT, and it is a problem, but we don't have a good workaround, if any. They're going to be working over the shallowest area, and there's no way around it. They're going to have to stay up the whole time this year. So unless we have another dry fall, we have a potential problem.
It's going to be fun then.
All right. Right.
And then I had one addition sometime. Gas production from the Bonneville to, I guess from the Cascade Island adult entrances. I was going to add this to the other.
Oh, this is an additional agenda item?
Yep.
Okay.
Basically, the whole thing is, we're seeing a lot more gas produced below Bonneville. We're not spilling than we've ever seen before, and we're wondering if someone's going to look at how to remedy that. It seems to be coming from all the adult interested there, and I don't know if the new interest case is making things worse, but we're seeing higher levels there when we're not spilling, and we're going, we should really track that down, because that's not a good situation to be in.
Yeah, that gate's not getting put in until...
May.
The 4th of May. So it could be the bollocks, or I don't know. We'll look into it. We'll have our water management office go down there and check it out.
Okay. Yeah. Just
what kind of levels? I mean, are you getting what's your levels?
Oh, shoot. We saw like a 113.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, levels are just—it's much higher than we've ever seen in the past. I'm just trying to figure out what has changed here. I didn't realize that the gate was not fully installed yet. I was thinking maybe we had an easy one. It was just the gate design was changing things, but oh well.
All right.
That's it for me on the Dell.
Okay. Well. Number 7 is just going to get moved on to the next agenda, to the next FPOM meeting. Number 8, we spent all of that hour on, plus. Task groups. Yeah. Task groups. Lamprey. There isn't anybody here from the Lamprey group except Tim, unless you have something. I think we talked about Lamprey. What?
I'm on there.
You are? Well, what do you got for Lamprey?
Nothing. I'm just saying.
Pinnipeds, I can just give you a quick update. 13 have been trapped to date. 7 have been euthanized. 2 released. 2 are being held for some test results, and 2 have been acoustically tagged and released.
That's 2 different things.
So.
Say it again.
Can you say that one more?
13 have been trapped total. 7 of them have been euthanized. 2 of them were relocated to Point Defiance Zoo and going to Shedd Aquarium after that. 2 of them are currently being held to get their blood work back. And then 2 of them that were trapped were released with acoustic tags on them. They didn't meet the removal criteria.
Question. Are the ones that were euthanized, did they have other issues?
They had a couple issues.
Cancerous lesions
and blood worms. I don't know the details of what they had.
But the herpes is making them not able to go to the zoos for a breeding colony.
But I mean, that's the states determine what they have and if they're willing to send them.
Trapping schedules
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And that's all I have for that task group.
Hey, Bernie, they may not know that there's a weekly report posted on the TMT website under City Lines documents.
Yeah, if you go into the TMT website under other documents, then there will be a Sea Lion weekly report posted, which gives you all the details. I don't think it's getting into the detail. I know it's not as far as what the actual health health condition is.
They just say they failed.
Yeah.
Do they all have herpes?
Some of them.
Some of them do.
One of the aquariums are.
Those that go to California.
The other 7 that were dead, all of them had herpes.
I think the majority of them. I don't know if all of them had it. Well, those 2 being held right now probably don't, because they're waiting for blood work. If they had them, the visual lesions, they would euthanize them. So, let's see. The other thing we had, hard copies will be ready for next FPOM. An add-on, I added on the Cascade Island ladder entrance weir that I've got pictures in case somebody wants to just see what it looks like. It's a keyhole weir that's going to be installed.
What's for the Lamprey?
No, it's not in there. It's for the Lamprey, and it was slotted to go in May 6th at night, approved by FPOM, but the contractor wants to do it 2 days earlier, same time, just 2 days early. Shouldn't be an issue.
FPOM says okay.
Yeah. Then we have some...
Problem with it?
Doing 2 days early.
No, I would think you'd be in favor of it earlier, the better.
Probably.
I mean, it's peak run anyway.
Yeah.
So the last couple of things, we have some change forms.
What? No, we don't.
No, we don't. What is this thing? 12.9.
So the FPP changes for 2010. I was looking through the DALs and came across this section 5.5 that talks about unit priority when operating outside the 1%. And we changed the DALs unit priority, so just something to think about. I'm not proposing any change. I just put it on there as something that might need to be changed for the next Fish Passage Plan.
All right. I'm officially ending this meeting. Done.
Good job.
Thanks for coming.